Let's talk about the latest rumor from Ming-Chi Kuo right at the front today. And this is on the, you know, so-called iPhone SE 2, the new entry-level model in the lineup. What's new with our friend Ming-Chi Kuo this week, Benjamin?
Yeah, so obviously we had a few reports last week talking about the Kuo stories, and he was obviously talking about the iPhone SE 2 then. We were obviously discussing what we expected to be in form of a adapted version of the iPhone 8, just in the same way as that the original iPhone SE was an adapted version of the 5S body. It's basically taking the 2 to 3 year old design, putting a new processor in it, and selling it for, you know, a much lower price. Kuo had previously said the iPhone 8 design stuff, and it was coming in first quarter 2020, but this week he kind of nailed down the tech specs a bit more. And it's essentially what you'd expect. It's again, looks like the iPhone 8, comes with the A13 chip, but only 3 gigabytes of RAM, whereas the current lineup of flagship phones have 4 gigabytes of RAM. So the 11 and the 11 Pro will have 4 gigabytes of RAM this year. 3 gigabytes of RAM is the same as the 10R last year, but obviously that was an A12 chip. So this would be the A13 chip, but it'd be slightly less RAM. And then it would come in 64 and 128 gigabyte storage options, which is actually higher than what I was kind of modeling my head, because when we were discussing it before, it kind of felt like for this low-end phone, they would probably match the low-end iPad storage at 32, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's saying it's going to be 64, which is, you know, rather amusingly, the lowest storage you can buy on the $999 iPhone 11 Pro, right? So at least you're getting the same storage as the highest-end model. He says it will come in 3 color options, silver, space gray, and red, which is nice because often the cheapest phones don't come in all the pretty colors.
Yeah, so no gold, but no gold. You get red, which probably
which obviously was not there at the iPhone 8 release. It was added mid-cycle, the product red iPhone 8.
And the original iPhone SE, you know, that was like the shape of the iPhone 5S, was space gray, silver, and
gold.
Yeah, like the 5S was, for example. So
yeah,
this would be, and it never had a red version of that phone. So this one, they've done a red version of the iPhone 8 or iPhone 7. It'll just be neat that that's an option from the start of this specific phone.
Yeah, and Kuo says that these configurations will start at $399, and $399 is the same price of what the iPhone SE debuted at originally back in 2016. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, rolling out the same playbook twice. Although back then you were getting 16 gigs of storage for $399, which is, you know, that was definitely in the era of when everyone was complaining about 16 gigs of storage being punitive.
Right.
And people kind of, you know, turned an eyelid against it because it was the lowest end iPhone. But still, fast forward 4 years and Apple's dramatically improved the storage situation across the board. And so, like, you use a 64 gig phone at the moment, right? So
yeah.
64 gig is much better shape than what the 16 gig situation was like. And so being able to have an iPhone SE 2 for $400 for 64 gigabytes of storage is pretty good. Now, when we posted this, some people are like, how does Kuo know what the price is going to be? What is he? in the wording, he says he expects the price will be $399.
Yes.
And so what I infer from that is he's kind of just looking at like bill of materials costs and then, you know, timesing that number by, like, that'd be 30, basically doing the calculation assuming Apple's normal gross margin, so essentially timesing it by 3,
mm-hmm.
because they have like generally have 35% gross margin, 35 to 40% gross margin on the iPhone. So, and they stick to that pretty religiously year to year, so you can kind of guess based on just like raw bill of materials costs approximately where it's going to land. And if it's closer to 400 than 450, oh, he's going to start at 400. Like, it definitely wipes out the, you know, $500 price tier, right? And the current iPhone 8 that is still sold at the moment, which we assume will be discontinued when the SE 2 comes out, is sold at $450. So you'd be getting, you know, a better phone for $50 less than what's currently available through Apple itself.
Yeah, so a few things there. First is that I do use a 64 gigabyte phone, but it's only possible because I pay Apple $10 a month for 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, and there's all these features like, you know, streaming all of your music and having your photos and videos in the, you know, in the cloud and only local whenever you pull them up, that otherwise would not be possible, like, before those services were available. And to that point, like, 512 wouldn't be enough locally either. But yeah, if you do service or if you have like very few photos and videos and you know, you stream your music, then 64 is fine. Other thing is that this will, well, I guess two things for me that I'm curious about. So, Quo expects this phone will not have 3D touch like the iPhone 8 does have. And that can afford it more battery life, presumably. So, and that was a big part of the original SE, right? That mm-hmm. you know, you've got a more efficient chip and a slightly bigger battery, because you're doing like the third revision to that phone. And you've learned some things over the years. And so this sounds like it will be a much better value long term than the iPhone 8 is today. Because you get a much better chip. You get decent storage. Presumably, you know, the battery life improvements from not having 3D touch it'll be the same trade off as you had on the 10R and then the current 11 family. And the other thing I wonder about, is there anything about the camera that's been reported yet? Because
no, that is the open question. Because yeah. Obviously, the camera in the iPhones has improved quite a lot since the iPhone 8 days, and mm-hmm. ideally, you'd hope they could give it like the iPhone 11 wide angle sensor,
right? Yeah,
but there hasn't been any reporting either way on what.
And that was part of the SE deal, was mm-hmm. you didn't have the 5S camera, you had the iPhone 7 camera, right? And then I think it was really good, or was it the 6S camera?
It was 6S, because the iPhone SE came out 6 months after the 6S came out.
Yeah, so you had like it was not a big trade off there at all. You obviously didn't get the option for a second telephoto lens like the Plus models had. But you got like this year's iPhone camera with live photos on that phone. And at first, like, it really looked like that phone, the original SE, was like too good to be true. But really, it was that they were beefing it up because they weren't going to update it, you know, seemingly ever until they discontinued it.
Yeah, because the only change they made to it is they improved the base storage to 32 gigabytes.
Yep.
And they put the price down. So it actually, the SE, when the SE was discontinued, it was 32 giga configuration for 350.
Yep.
So the return of the new SE would actually be putting the price back up a little bit to 399, mm-hmm. but it's the same as what it was when the SE was first introduced.
Yep. And that was also part of the factor with the original SE of what made it, you know, a pretty good deal. I think you could upgrade your storage from the 16 to 64, I think was the option. And it was like $100. So it wasn't terrible. And before they even did the price change. So that was the thing. But with this phone though, like if the iPhone 8 is, I mean, that's the bottom of the market right now for what you can buy from Apple. It's not terrible. You know, and I wonder if there will be any sort of like premium besides 3D touch. There's something nice about the iPhone 8 that they changed on this new phone, whatever they call it. Because that was also part of the deal slightly with the 5S turning SE, is that the chamfered edges of like the aluminum, you know, band became like matte finish. And
yeah, they weren't chamfered.
Yeah. So, and the iPhone 8 has like this glass back with wireless charging, and presumably that will be a thing here too. But I wonder if they would do any changes to anything about how the phone is made besides, you know, limit the colors.
Yeah, there isn't anything super obvious in terms of like the external design that makes it look particularly expensive, because it's basically the same as like the 10R body, which is the same as the iPhone 11 body. Like, they've been doing that for, you know, a few cycles now. The camera is certainly a place where maybe it's not as good. We've already heard that the A13 chip only has 3 gigabytes of RAM versus 4 gigabytes, right? But for a lot of people, if it has the iPhone 8 camera, that'll be, you know, more of a downside compared to the modern day iPhone 11 camera, which is very, very good. Plus, then that also potentially eliminates stuff like night mode, because Apple has, you know, their reasoning for no night mode on some of the other lenses is you need 100% focus pixels, and that's only on the wide angle camera. If you have the iPhone 8 camera lens, you wouldn't get focus pixels, so I presume you wouldn't get night mode either. You'd probably get the, you know, the kind of improvements to smart HDR and stuff like that, and maybe deep fusion, but, you know, they are pushing night mode as one of these big features, and that could be absent from the SE2 if it doesn't improve the camera hardware.
Yep, I could see that. And then I don't love guessing names, because it's so hard to do, because they pull things out of left field, but I don't think SE2 makes a lot of sense, and I don't think iPhone 9 makes a lot of sense, because it's got a better processor than the 10 and 10S had. So even though 9 was never used, neither was 7S.
Yeah, they're never going to go backwards in numbers. Like, yeah. The options in my head are like, they'll just use the SE name again.
Me too.
Or they'll do 11 with a modifier on it.
That would be pretty good because it's got the 11 generation chip. So, you know, Google's done things like, what do they do? Like Pixel is like 3A.
It's 3A, yeah.
That's so odd, but some sort of modifier like that that says this is an 11 generation phone, but it's not the 11.
Maybe iPhone 11 SE.
Yeah, iPhone 11 SE. Yeah, I don't know. But SE2 doesn't sound right to me because it's not like a new version of that phone. SES doesn't really work as like a modifier. So that's one of the big curiosities here. Is like, what do they do with the camera? Do they do anything else to change it to make it, you know, cheaper to manufacture? And then what do they call this thing? You know?
Yeah, if I had to guess today, I'd say they're just going to bring out the SE name again and do it again.
Me too, yep.
Yeah, in the same way that they, you know, didn't change the MacBook Air name when they changed its design. They just modernized it, right? They'll just continue it.
That's helped by the fact that the SE is not in the lineup anymore. It hasn't been for, a year now?
Yeah. From Apple. And it's SE is a nice name that distinguishes it from, because obviously it's still going to be the A-Lin in terms of not having Face ID or anything like that, without it sounding particularly old. Because I think that is the problem. If they went for 11 with the modifier, it's not close enough to, you know, even the iPhone XS, right? Like, because it lacks the full screen body and it lacks the Face ID, you know, hardware and stuff. So calling it SE rather than like iPhone 9, because even 9 makes it sound old, right?
Right, yeah.
That's like 3 years ago now, and that in the head of the marketing branding. Whereas if you call it SE, like SE is just like a timeless phrase that you can call out.
Even though it seems that the price was the big appeal of the original iPhone SE, it was that you could get a real iPhone for a pretty good price. They introduced it as a beloved design, and they maybe thought that it was also a large part was going to be because it's a 4-inch screen size and not a, you know, 4. What were we at then? 7.
This will be 4.7.
Yeah, yeah, this will be 4.7, which is still smaller than what you get from the larger phones today. But there's also next year's rumors of like smaller phones than the iPhone 10 and 11 or 10 and 11 Pro. But yeah, just doing SE in this case would be sort of the same acknowledgement of the past, and that you know what they said, this was a beloved design, we're going to bring it back. The iPhone 8 hasn't gone yet, but it's got those same appeals that if you do not want a gesture-based full-screen system with Face ID and to unlock your phone, and you like the old way of having a home button, whether it's just preference or motor skills or whatever, then having this as like the throat, you know, acknowledge of a past design, just say an SE makes a lot of sense there.
So yeah, and I know everyone loves to mourn the small phones situation. I think Apple has, in its actions, shown that people don't really care about small phones. Because if they did, they would make a professional small phone. And even the rumor for the 5.4-inch one is still not going to be anywhere near as small as the iPhone SE, one, right?
Yeah.
Like, if Apple saw a market for SE-sized phones, they would have revved it into a modern design.
It'd be a subscription.
Rather than just rolling out the iPhone 8. Like, this is clearly a price play, and I wouldn't be surprised if what you're saying about the biometrics, there's probably more customers in the world that are hesitant about Face ID and would upgrade to another Touch ID device, in my estimation, than people that are like, oh, I want a really 4-inch sized phone, mm-hmm, versus going bigger.
Well, and just the whole fear of like, I've got, you know, I think part of the quote is that he believes that 6S buyers, or it was 6 or 6S buyers.
Yeah, he says iPhone 6 and 6S because obviously iPhone 6 doesn't get iOS 13, so mm-hmm, they're kind of at the end of the road in terms of software support. You can't do Apple Arcade, you can't get the latest software, etc., yeah, etc.
So he sees this as a big upgrade opportunity for those phone customers. And if that's the case, like, I mean, just it doesn't have to be that you're afraid of like ramifications of using your face to unlock your phone. It can just be that you know how your phone works and you don't care to learn a new way. Like, learn everything from scratch again, that you just want to have what you know, the tried and trusted phone that you've always had. But
right, your iPhone 6 breaks, you walk into the shop, oh, that one looks like my iPhone 6, I'll walk out with it.
Right, yep. Yeah. Yep, that makes total sense. It's like a comfort thing. I mean, it's not what we do, but we're happy to try new things if they work and they look good. But I still hear it from people all the time that they like the home button. You know, they like not even just like a Touch ID faster than Face ID, but just the home button. You know, it's something that they know and love.
This week's Happy Hour is brought to you by Charge ASAP and its brand new Infinity Cable, launching this month. The new Infinity Cable is a 6.5-foot nylon cable with interchangeable connectors for USB-C, Lightning, and micro USB. And these connectors are actually magnetic. So not only does that mean you can use a single cable with all of your devices, it also brings back Apple's MagSafe-like functionality that allows the cable to safely disconnect if it gets snagged on something. If the device gets yanked with the Infinity cable attached, the cable just pops right off, leaving that magnetic adapter in your phone or laptop. While there are other magnetic cables on the market, this is the first with full support for 100-watt power delivery and Qualcomm Quick Charge 3.0 and 4.0. You'll be able to charge your MacBooks and any other device at full speed. Now, USB-C is a notoriously fickle fellow. Some cables only support charging, some support data, some support some weird combination of both. The Infinity cable offers full data transfer capabilities in addition to the 100-watt charging, a feature combination that is not something all the other magnetic cables on the market can claim. You can grab the Infinity cable now for up to 60% off its expected retail price with early bird pricing on Kickstarter, starting at just $25 per cable, including the connectors. Thanks to Charge ASAP, we're also launching a MacBook Pro giveaway in the coming week to celebrate the launch of the new Infinity cable. Hit up the link in the show notes to check it out. Our thanks again to Charge ASAP for sponsoring Happy Hour.
Let's talk for a moment about the latest betas of software. Before we even talk about the betas, I want to acknowledge that the HomePod update for this year is not out yet. Which is whatever, it's just the HomePod. But that they promised to watch OS 6 for the Apple Watch Series 1 and 2, and that those aren't out yet either. And presumably they'll be out. Well, I'm not going to say, I have no idea. Maybe they'll be out by the end of the month. Maybe they'll be out in November. Maybe they'll backtrack.
Wait, surely it's the 6.1 update.
Is there a beta for that, though, on those devices? Yeah. There's a 6.1 beta for the Series 1 and 2?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's cool then. So that seems to be there won't be a 6.0. There'll be a 6.1 for those devices. That's cool.
Yeah. And if you look at timeline, it's probably like early November, I'd guess, for iOS 13.2 and all the rest. And that's probably when the HomePod update's coming as well, because we saw in 13.2, they added that setting for, you know, the HomePod handoff in the in the settings. And obviously that doesn't work yet. So I'm guessing all of that's coming like early November-ish.
Of course, they had 6.0 betas, right, for the Series 1 and 2.
Yeah, they did, obviously. They did have 6.0 betas, and then they stopped and said it wasn't coming until later. But there are 6.1 betas that run on the Series 2 and 1.
What do you do if you're running the beta? Do you just stay on it, and that's it? You can't go back. Yeah.
You can't go back. You go to the 6.1 beta, and then eventually you'll be able to upgrade to the public version.
Yeah, but I have seen things where like developers release apps for, like, if it's a watch only app, then you can't get it on what Series 1 and Series 2 because you don't have the watch app store, and you know it relies on having the phone app.
Oh, so like someone releases a WatchOS 6 app, and then the Series 1 and Series 2 people are just left out for the time being.
Well, any standalone Apple Watch app where there's no phone part to it, like Moon Plus Plus, which turned into Geneva Moon. And there was a new like mood tracker app that I saw this week that I'll link in the show notes. I don't know the name of it off the top of my head, but there was one customer who like they wanted to buy it because they liked the idea of like a mood tracker on the Apple Watch, but then they went to the app store and it said iOS 13 required, and it's like, I have iOS 13 on my iPhone, this runs iOS 13, and it ended up being, oh well, the watch can't do watchOS 6, and it's a watch only app. And, you know, there was no, like, way to communicate that from how they built the App Store and, like, the message warning. But, you know, right now, so those Series 1 and Series 2 can't get it. And also, I think where Overcast, the podcast player, had an update that required WatchOS 6, just thinking, like, this is, you know, what I'm going to target, the new OS. And that cut off updates for the Series 1 and Series 2 prematurely since Apple hasn't released the update for those watches yet. But yeah, and that would be nice if it's in November and not like never or, you know, next year, I guess. So, but let's talk about the new beta versions that we have this week. So I'm a little bit fuzzy on the release dates of all these things because they just keep happening. But it's the iOS 13.2 beta, and we're on version 3 now.
Yes.
Yep. And there's just like, this is one small thing I picked up on today, which was I think we even discussed in the second beta version where they had the new UI for like or lack of a UI.
No, that's new because
we haven't talked about that.
Beta 2 was released after we recorded last week.
Yeah. Ah, okay. So in beta 2, you can change the resolution of the video camera and the frame rate without going to the settings app. You would tap it, and you did not like the first implementation of this at all, for good reasons. And then in beta 2, it's a little bit better. Like my one complaint was that the way you tap the resolution changes is like you're in 4K, so you want to change to 1080p. You got to tap twice to get through 720p, and it's like, is anyone really gonna do that? Like, do they really want to go from 4K to 720p and you know just get to 1080? And so they've removed 720p from like the short menu or the short selector there, not really a menu.
Yeah, like that's the problem. It's not a menu.
Yeah, it's not a menu. It's just like
it just says like 4K, and then there's a dot which is like a bullet point, and then it says 60. So that means you're recording 4K at 60 frames a second.
Yeah.
And they don't even look like buttons, because in the middle you've got text, which is you know how long you're recording for, and that's just text. It looks exactly the same as that. But on the left, obviously, you've got the flash button, which actually has a ring around it because it's a circle, right? So you've got a button, and then on the right-hand side, you haven't got buttons, but you can actually tap them. And then you tap to cycle through the options. And when you're tapping with your big thumb, my thumb covers both options at once. Like, it's even hard to know if I'm tapping the right side of this tiny little quote-unquote button. And you can't really see that it's changed because your finger's covering it. What they need is just, like, a menu. So you tap on the camera format, and then it just brings up a full menu that it can just show you your options, and you just tap it, and then it goes away. Like the cycling through thing is just, it's not good. And I hope they fix it or improve it in the future.
Yeah, I mean, on the Pro iPhones on any iPhone 11, they've redesigned the camera app in such a way that like there's all these creative controls that are hidden under like either like a tap or a gesture to slide up. And,
yeah, like a pull up tray. Why don't they put that in there?
Right. Yeah. Like it's a whole new place for it. I assume it works on more than just the 11, or was
no.
it? No,
the camera only format options are iPhone 11 exclusive, which also feels like a real shot in the in the backside.
Because you've always had the labels up there, or you've had them there for a while. At least.
They took the labels out.
Oh.
Yeah, so at least in beta 2, they took the labels away, so it didn't even look like you... So there wasn't confusion that the old phones couldn't do it.
Right.
But
okay.
Yeah, but it is 100% true that the older phones are capable of changing the camera mode in the camera app, because all the third-party apps can do it, and they use the same API, right?
I mean, this like dates back to like the iOS 7 criticism of like what's a button and what's just a text label, and these used to be text labels and now they're buttons, but they look no different.
Yeah, they actually do something, and there's no like highlight state. It's just really bad when the rest of the camera app has like a design visual language for this is a button, this is a tray, this is a little pop-up menu. Because like if you're in video mode and you swipe up, the tray has flash options, and you'd be like, why are the flash options there? Because they're also in the toolbar at the top left. Well, they could equally duplicate the camera format options and actually have an actual menu where you can actually tap on stuff. So, one, I would hope that they can improve the UI, and two, it does feel like a real sting for older phone users that they have made this iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro exclusive, because it really shouldn't be that way.
The other change that I'm aware of is you know... They did this change where whenever you hold it on an icon, you get the new contextual menu. They had this edit home screen option so that you can tap that or let your finger off of that, and then you go into the wiggle mode without like doing a long press and then waiting through the menu pop up, and then you get into the wiggle mode. But that didn't solve the problem of you want to delete an app quickly, because you still had to wait through the whole like menu pop up and then keep waiting for the jiggles and then tap the X. They have I'm pleased with this. It's all white text for all the descriptions, except for this new one, which is delete app with a trash can next to it, and that's in red. And, you know, like, it's a little bit weird that what began as, like, 3D touch, quick menus or quick shortcuts?
Quick actions.
Quick actions. Like, those, it was just, like, jump into the app quickly to a certain part of the app, and now it is, like, this whole menu of some quick actions, but also to rearrange your home screen or delete the app. But it's to me, I'm perfectly happy with it, even though it's like different from that, because It was annoying to delete an app. Like, it was slower than before, and now you've got it as one of those options. And it's visually distinctive from the rest of them, so you're probably not going to accidentally hit it. And then you've also got to, like, confirm before you delete anyway. So I'm pleased with this.
Yeah, it's fine. Obviously, because before you'd have to click, like, the edit home screen option and then wait for them to jiggle and then click the X. So clearly people weren't finding that or being frustrated by that. So now you've got separate options for edit home screen and delete app, which feels a little redundant, but deleting an app's probably pretty common, so I can see where they've done that. I still think that those buttons should be in a different separate menu, like a different part of the screen to the actual quick actions, because they put a line through them, like a little separator, but it's still really easy if you're just like skimming with your thumb down to actually hit the, you know, the springboard editing controls rather than the controls that are specific to the app. So I prefer if they like move the buttons to the corners of the screen, maybe, so you have like edit in the bottom left and delete in the bottom right or something like that, rather than being in the same menu, because then it's a bit clutchy as it is. It's fine, but I think it could be better.
Is there anything else in the new betas that we're haven't discussed yet? Or I guess the big thing was what we talked about I think last week, was that you've got the ability to ungroup HomeKit accessories, more that crazy bundling. I did that on the iPhone, and I went through, like, because it isn't the default, I went through like every accessory that's bundled and I unbundled all of them. And then on my iPad I wasn't doing the beta, and I was like, what is this? This is bad again. No. So I haven't done the beta yet on the iPad, but I'm about to install it, you know, just for that one reason alone. And there are new emoji now. With the new sort of like interface for picking the skin tone, or like they've had to add some new menus to how you can change the emoji, because now I guess the problem was something we discussed before was you've had this menu for like this pop-up menu for picking the skin tone, but what do you do when you want to address the couple emojis or family emojis and you want to change the skin tone of each individual emoji? Like, do you have just a gigantic catalog of emoji to pick from, or do you have a picker designed for that, you know, to solve that problem? And in this beta with the new emoji, they have shipped that new UI that we sort of imagined, right?
Yeah. So you can, they basically have two rows, and the top row is the diversity selector for the left-hand side of the couple, and then the right-hand side of the couple is the bottom, the second row. And so you can just like tap twice and you've picked your combination. I think it's a clever implementation of what, because if you think about that, there's quite a lot of options and combinations. So if you just stuff the keyboard with those many options, it'd be ridiculous. So it's quite a compact way to let you pick between, you know, many discrete options.
Speaking of HomeKit, I haven't looked at this yet, but I've got our 9to5 Mac Slack in front of us. And, one of the stories that we're looking at, you know, by now will be on the site, but it's about, IKEA's smart blinds. And these things have been announced and like, I think released in Europe. But they've been announced and delayed over and over and over in the US. And the story seems to be that they're now available in some US stores, presumably from IKEA. So, that's something that I cannot wait to try out, because I've tried HomeKit smart blinds before from, they work with the Lutron Bridge, and there's some like special branding for the shades, but they're very expensive. Like one window cost me, like $1,000. It was almost $1,000. And they gave me like a press credit to review, but I still ended up paying money just to cover the window. It was kind of crazy. And then I moved, and now I didn't have that window anymore, and it was a very odd shape. So no more HomeKit shades. But these IKEA ones, the big appeal is that they seem to be like reasonably priced for, you know, a smart shade, a shade in general. That there's not, you know, precious material used or some crazy system. So I've been waiting for these, and actually I bought a house, my first house, over the weekend and moved in. And so I'm recording in my new office space now. And I've been through this whole process of moving all the HomeKit stuff from the last home to the new home. And I plan on rebooting the HomeKit weekly column that I used to do, because there's just so many, you know, things that interest me now is like having used HomeKit since it launched and like learning things along the way, where like a goal of mine this time is to not use any hue lights at all and go all in on Lutron, because I'm just a big fan of how that all works. And something else is that the last time I did a move, I just like erased the home and the home app and started from scratch. And now it was such a pain because there are some accessories that are really hard to reset. Or if you don't have the code, you can't set them back up again, the HomeKit code. So this time I didn't do that. I just brought my home in the home app with me, and I'm just like reassigning the rooms and things as I go. But, this looks cool. Like, this is one of the big things I've been waiting for, are these HomeKit shades from IKEA that you can actually afford.
Yeah. And they're actually in a price range that seems, you know, semi-reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm happy to see that pop up. Before we go on to the next topic too, there seems to be a lot of talk now. It's been like a long lasting thing, but the whole idea where Apple got rid of their AirPort line, and then now everybody else is doing routers, and then now this year we've got these HomeKit routers coming. Like, it seems to be a very bad time to buy a router right now, because there's HomeKit Secure, or not HomeKit Secure, that's for video, but there are HomeKit enabled routers to some degree coming, and there's Wi-Fi 6. It's like, just that it's like a quick mention. That stuff isn't ready yet. Like, I think the only Wi-Fi 6 thing is like super expensive, and there's none of these Wi-Fi or HomeKit routers yet that we know of, right?
There are not out there. The routers are not out yet. No.
Yeah.
I think the HomeKit router stuff you need to like chill a bit on, because there aren't really. It's like a security thing more than anything. Yeah. There isn't much in terms of like functionality that a user can do. It's just protection. It's like a firewall for every accessory inside the router.
Yeah, when Apple closed the AirPort line down, they even left like some room for getting back into it, like if they thought they could make some change. Their whole reasoning was like, we made Wi-Fi work for everybody, and now we've got no big change we can make, and so we're going to be out of these things. But they left the door open by saying something like, if there's some way we can affect the category in the future, we will. So I'm optimistic based only on the amount of people that are saying, why isn't Apple doing a router anymore? And it's been like a long, obvious thing, but more and more people are picking up on it. So
And actually just this week Google announced the new Nest Wi-Fi, which is their mesh Wi-Fi option, and they've actually integrated their Google Home Mini into it, so you get a smart speaker in the mesh base stations.
And I was going to mention that too, that there is the rumor of the cheaper HomePod coming, and I don't think you get to a cheaper HomePod by putting in a router, but if people keep asking for those kind of things that Apple hasn't done yet, maybe in a few years they will. Like, I could see it. So, we'll see.
They got out of displays and came back into displays. They could come back to routers if... I think the problem they just have is sales volume. Like, it's so minimal compared to their... As much as I want them to do it, it's just one of the... They obviously had to refine and simplify their product teams a bit, and that was just the one that was low on the list in terms of income and revenue, so it got cut, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was thinking if they wanted to do this, could they just buy a company that's like done this already? But then, no, they've done it too. They could do it again.
Oh. Hiring these days just isn't as simple as putting an ad in the newspaper or posting to a job board. With more qualified candidates than ever before and remote work expanding the hiring pool even further, you need something to help you find the right people for your business. When you're juggling the need for new hires with everything else it takes to grow your business, it's important to be able to reach out to the right candidates at the right time, easily. This is where LinkedIn Jobs comes in. Get up and running from the LinkedIn Jobs dashboard. Simply start with your company name, job title, and location. Education and grades are important, but LinkedIn also considers qualities like collaboration, work ethic, and adaptability. LinkedIn Jobs finds people that are not only qualified, but fit in with your company's culture. It does the legwork to find the most qualified candidates so you can focus on hiring the person who will transform your business. It looks beyond just work skills and connects you with candidates who match your business perfectly. LinkedIn makes sure your job post gets in front of the people you want to hire. In fact, great candidates are hired every 8 seconds on LinkedIn. Find the right person meant for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want, and the first $50 is on them. Just visit linkedin.com/happyhour. Again, that's linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring Happy Hour.
Hi, Mayo. Something else new this week. new headphones from Apple, sort of the new Beats Solo Pro headphones. These have kind of been on our radar for a little while, and we haven't been able to talk about it, but they're officially announced as of this week. They're available for pre-order in the US and then shipping October 30th, near the end of the month. And and what they are, it's a new version of the Beats Solo on-ear headphones line, but it's the first like redesign since Apple bought Beats years and years ago. Sort of like the same thing where they did the Power Beats updates. You know, they put in the Apple chips to make them work like AirPods in some ways in terms of like wireless connectivity and battery life. But there was no new design. There was micro USB charging with Power Beats. Then Power Beats Pro came along, and the Chase card, the case charges with Lightning, and the headphones are actually like truly wireless. In this case, you know, you're not doing truly wireless on your headphones, even though some people have tried that so far. It's a thing that exists. But these are they're a big redesign from like the previous Beats Solo 3 wireless headphones that exist on the market today. And the price is what, $299, $300? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're not cheap, but they are pretty cool. So they come in a range of colors like a lot of Beats products do. You got like black, gray and gold, beige and gold, and then there's like a dark blue color, red color, and like a light blue color. I believe that's the full range there, like six colors total. But what's interesting about these is it's the first time that they're doing active noise cancellation on the Solo headphones. So they've done active noise cancellation on the Studio headphones, which costs like $350 or so.
Yeah, that's the free, and they're over ear ones.
Yeah, and those are over ear, so it's like your ear is inside of like the big cup, and they're much larger. These are on ear, so now they've got active noise cancellation with on ear headphones for the first time from Beats, at least, and there's some more intelligence to it. Like, there's no more power button anymore. They turn on by unfolding them. So like you've always been able to fold these Beats headphones to like collapse them and put them in a case and put them in your backpack or whatever. But now the way that you turn them on and off is that you fold them in to turn them off and you unfold them to turn them on. It's like the equivalent of putting your AirPods in the case to turn them off or your Power Beats Pro in their case to turn them off. There's no equivalent to like you've taken off your headphones and they pause. I guess they just didn't see a need for that or couldn't do that in a way that made sense. But there is a big button on the side, like always, for clicking it to play and pause and control volume on the side. So that's neat. There's Lightning charging. So it's got no headphone jack, which is new for the Solo line. Like even the wireless headphones have come with a 3.5-inch headphone jack or 3.5-millimeter headphone jack. And then you've got the cable and you can use that for wired use. These are totally wireless in that you cannot use them with a cable. You just charge them with your iPhone charger and that's what you do. 22 hours of battery life, 40 hours if you don't use active noise cancellation. And there's this other mode that is brand new to the Beats line that I think is really cool, which is called transparency. And this is one of those things where a version of this exists on other headphones, but it's the first for the Beats line. And what it is it uses the new microphones on these headphones to pick up the ambient sound around you, and then it pipes that in over your music or podcast, or if you just have them on, you're not playing anything, you can hear everything. You can even sort of amplify it as like an accessibility feature to where you control the volume of what's around you, and you can wear on your headphones without having like that muffled effect of not hearing the world around you. And so like if you're walking through a busy city or, you know, you want to hear someone talking to you, if they say, you know, hey, the flight attendant is asking for what your drink is, like I've been in those moments plenty. Then you can hear that person say your name. And that's pretty cool. And like the button, there's one button now that controls turning noise cancellation on or off, and you hold it down to turn it off, and you click it once to change in between noise cancellation and the new transparency mode. And then you've got the, what are we on now, the H1 chip from H1, Apple.
Yeah,
that's in the second generation AirPods and the Power Beats Pro. And so you get all the benefits of that, including the ability to activate Siri, your voice, and we haven't got a full review of these yet. We do have units to review, so I'll have more on that.
And in your initial try, you were pretty impressed with the noise cancellation stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. I plan to write about it before by the release day of these things. So when you go out to buy them, you can know more about them. But with the transparency stuff, I was really impressed by that. So I knew that these things are coming for a little while. We knew that, but we didn't know about the transparency stuff or the auto power, fold to power feature. So the transparency stuff, I was using noise cancellation and I was next to my TV and I had it turned way up just to try that out. And I could barely make out that the TV was even on and I didn't hear someone come in the front door. And I was like, yeah, this is noise cancellation, very similar to the studio headphones, but it's kind of more impressive because it's they're on ear cups and not over your ear, so there's not even that more isolation that you get. So the noise cancellation is very impressive. And then I turned off noise cancellation. So I held the button down, turned it off, and you could hear the TV sort of muffled. And then I turned the mode back on for noise cancellation and then clicked the button once. And then that was transparency. And it was like I wasn't wearing headphones anymore. I could hear people talking around me. I could hear the TV louder than if I didn't have headphones on because I had the volume turned up. And I was really impressed. I don't usually run in headphones versus earphones or go to the gym and use them. I have a few times, if you're on a machine and it's less of a big deal, but I'd be nervous about running in these. I see people running in big headphones, during races and stuff, but it's not for me. But I have also walked through, New York City with big headphones on to kind of drown out the noise of the city and listen to a podcast or music. But I also have that anxiety of I can't, if someone comes up behind me and shouts, I can't hear it. And with these, you have that same sense of awareness, plus the sort of interesting, ability. If you wanted to have the TV at a low volume and then wear the headphones and turn them way up, and then you can sort of hear the TV better without disturbing, people in the room, even if you don't have, a Bluetooth connection to the TV. So I was really impressed.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's definitely a lot of overlap now between these Solo Pros and the studios because these are, $100 or $50 cheaper than the studios and better in basically every way, apart from their on-air versus over-ear design, right? And I don't think there's a reason you'd pick the over-ears versus on-ear if the noise cancellation is as good on the on-ears anyway. So, obviously you've got to do some more testing before you do the full write-up and stuff, and you can do some side-by-side comparisons, and maybe they actually rev the studios in the future too to add the unfolding features and transparency and and the Siri stuff and everything else, so it might come back to an equilibrium. The other thing that this kind of announcement brings up is the Beats Solo Pro, the rumored Apple headphones that we heard about a lot last year, and it was considered a full 2019 product, and obviously Apple hasn't officially announced their own, but these fit the bill in many ways, apart from the fact they don't have an Apple logo on them.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I would have assumed that Apple would do in headphones that are more like AirPods are you take them off and they pause, you put them back on and they turn back on, and these don't do that. And it's kind of an interesting omission.
Doesn't seem like they could release their own headphones just with that difference, though, and justify it.
They could do an even higher end version. They could ignore the studios and not give them this update in the future. They could, keep the studios around as a thing or just get rid of them. Beats also has a headphone called Beats Pro, and it's only wired, and they're I think they cost $400. And those are meant for using in a studio, and I guess it's more so than the Beats studios are, right? But I could see Apple's things being studio equivalent, but then they get the smart features and they don't do this for studio. They are over your ear, not just on your ear, as long as you don't rev the studios. But these do, with the release time frame and the features that were rumored, these do seem like they could have been those. The only thing that gives me hesitation is I could say the same thing about the AirPods that were rumored, to have sporty features. And you could say, well, Power Beats Pro, were those that? And now we're seeing, you know, evidence that there will be a sportier version, you know, with the in-ear version of AirPods.
I don't know. Like when the Power Beats Pro came out, I didn't immediately go, oh, they're the water resistant AirPods. Like, they're very different, right?
But they are water resistant. Unlike AirPods.
Yeah, like, but when the Power Beats Pro were announced, it was a surprise, but nobody was going, oh, so the AirPods aren't happening, right? Because we'd heard rumored, you know, more water resistant AirPods with noise cancellation, and the Power Beats Pro do not look like AirPods. They are very different products, right? Like, there's a reason the AirPods and the Power Beats Pro can stand in the line and differentiate themselves very well. The description, at least, of what we had of the Apple headphones is very close to what these are. So it seems... it seems more unlikely compared to the, you know, AirPods Power Beats situation.
Mm. Yeah. So it's possible. I don't know. It's possible. I'd still love to just imagine like what Apple would do. It would be even more confusing though. Like, AirPods are one thing because they've always done their earbuds, and the AirPods are a hit, but Apple's never done headphones, right? And so they've used Beats for that, and then all the different variations of earphones. So I'm really torn on that. I can't say one or the other, but these definitely do seem like they could have been what was rumored. And how does a supply chain know, you know, what brand it will be under and that kind of thing? You know, it's all Apple's ownership, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. We'll have to wait and see, I guess. But it is true that the Apple headphone rumors kind of died down this year, and now these are out. So maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's also talk about some TV Plus stuff. So we're getting really close to Apple TV Plus video service launching. We've seen a lot more information about, you know, what exactly will be there. What is it, November 1st when it launches? I'm curious if anyone like pays at first, because there's a free trial, and then there's like the year free when you bought something this year. Whether it's an iPad, an Apple TV,
a phone,
an iPhone, is the Mac,
Apple Touch, Mac, everything but the watch, basically.
Watch and HomePod, right?
So yeah, I was thinking about this. Like, I actually looked up because obviously Apple doesn't do, they don't report numbers in their earnings reports anymore, right? Like, so you only get revenue numbers. Because I was thinking, for November 1st, how many Apple TV Plus trials would they have sold, you know, effectively sold by shipping the hardware, right, and making available? How many people can theoretically redeem a year of TV Plus on November 1st? And so what I instead did is I went back to 2017, which is the last time they have data for the two quarters, and on the basis that Apple's growth over that period has been essentially zero, I just took a third off of the September earnings and a third off the holiday earnings, because obviously it covers the period of September and October, right? So it kind of spans the two financial quarters. But if you just take 33% of those two quarters 2 years ago, you're close enough on a rough estimate. And I added up the product categories, and it comes to about 55 million.
Okay. Wow.
You do have to remember that the Apple TV Plus deal obviously is the subscription's family sharing. So theoretically, of those 55 million devices that have been sold, you know, some portion of those are going to the same households. And so the actual number of Apple TV Plus offers is going to be lower than 55 million. So maybe, you know, 40 million perhaps. That still leaves a lot of people who, you know, Apple keeps talking about, well, they have 1.3 billion iOS devices active or something like that. Mm-hmm. So 40 million versus 1.3 billion is still quite a big difference. Of course, if you are someone looking at TV Plus and then you can see that all these people are getting it for free, you might be like, your mindset as a customer might be, it's all right, I'll just hold off to the next time I buy something and then I'll get it for free for a year, right? Mm-hmm. So there's definitely some psychology there, people waiting. But theoretically, there should still be a fair amount of people that are interested in the service and won't have a free year to get. So, like, even if you say 55 million is the high end, even though that's not true because you have to account for the family sharing stuff, you've still got, you know, 900 million active Apple accounts that could theoretically watch this stuff and won't have bought any new Apple product recently. So at least on the literally November 1st, the day it comes out, right? And obviously that number only increases over time as they sell more and more hardware, especially up to Christmas. But in terms of just the raw launch date, It's about 55 million. Plus, then you have to account for the fact that Apple's obviously going to aggressively push TV Plus on non-Apple platforms, because that's the whole reason they're distributing the Apple TV app everywhere left and right. And this week we saw them release the Apple TV app for Roku, as announced in March. That was previously just a quote-unquote in the future thing, but it turned up as a bit of a surprise this week. It's supposedly coming to Amazon Fire TV in the future as well, although we don't know exactly when. Obviously, they have the TV app on the Samsung smart TVs, the 2019 models, right? And and the newer versions. And it's coming again to LG, Vizio, and Sony smart TVs in the unknown, unconfirmed future. But at least at launch, it's on smart TVs from Samsung. It will be on Roku. And those demographics, those ownerships, are not necessarily going to be people that are buying, you know, Apple products or brand new Apple products, especially on like Roku and stuff, right? And you will be able to theoretically watch Apple TV on the web at tv.apple.com. So I think there's a fair amount of people that are actually going to go to the $4.99, at least do the 7-day trial, which is what you get if you don't have the free year.
Right.
Yeah.
So that,
and whether they choose to keep paying is a different matter entirely. But at least on November 1st, there is a decent, you know, number of people and households that will not have a free year to redeem. So Apple has to convince some people at least to go to the 7-day trial situation.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this, and just the Apple TV Plus is free for the first year, and like, and it won't matter until the next year as to whether they try to get subscribers or not. But it's a really good point. You should be an analyst.
Well, because the other thing, the reason I was looking this number up is that, like, yes, right, this is going to sound stupid, but Apple's kind of monopolistic advantage in the TV space is not as great as it might first sound, because yes, they have a lot of devices in the world, but most of those devices are iPhones, and some people watch TV on their phone, but a lot of people, you know, I bet the majority of people that are watching Netflix are watching it on an actual TV, right? Or on an iPad. So, or a laptop, right?
Yeah,
but a lot of people watch it on their actual TV. That's where they want to watch actual TV. And if you look at Apple TV Plus's content lineup, they're going for the high quality 4K Ultra HDR, you know, all that shebang. They want these shows to look good. And if you look at the TV, i.e. like the 10-foot experience, Apple doesn't have a huge foothold there. The Apple TV does not sell in massive quantities because it's so expensive, and none of the other TVs in existence don't have integrated apps for the TV today. We only literally have Roku as of this week. A lot of people watch Netflix through like their PlayStation or their Xbox, like all of that stuff. Apple doesn't really have, you know, a built-up advantage. Obviously, they have a lot of money to invest in shows, and they have you've got a TV app on your phone, but in terms of the appeal of the service, it's not quite as big as, you know, as Netflix, because Netflix got a huge lead there because they have apps for literally every single platform, and including Android, obviously, which is something that Apple has conspicuously not announced yet for the TV app, whereas obviously they do the Android app for Apple Music, but they haven't announced plans for a TV app on Android yet, even though they have shown an interest in doing the TV app on, you know, other platforms other than iOS. So there is this like interesting equation of, yes, they have a lot of money and they have star power because they're Apple, and so they can attract the brands, and they can attract obviously a big marketing budget and attention because they're Apple. But if you actually get to the, you know, the brass tacks of the service, they've got an uphill battle to get actually into the living room for people to be able to use this.
On TweetDeck, I have a column that is every tweet with the word Apple Watch in the tweet, and I see a lot, and that's just so I can sort of like discover news stories or discover like trends happening around the Apple Watch product, and I care a lot about it. But you also get tweets with the word Apple and the word watch separated in that like live timeline column, and so I see a lot of tweets from people that are saying they're going to watch Apple TV Plus for one specific show, and like all the fan accounts are just totally separate from like the tech world, where they're like promoting this content because there's like one actor involved, and so they want to, you know, they're interested in the service specifically for this one person. So that kind of exposes me to more than just like the tech world of you know, gadgets and everything. It's like these are people that would not be on my radar otherwise, and I'm seeing like their interest in this you know, possibly pretty mainstream thing. So maybe unlike News Plus, they'll give out some numbers on this stuff, you know, before the free trial is even up, and they'll have something to brag about, which could be the only reason they would give out numbers. But
yeah, they could definitely brag about like X million people watched the first episode of the morning show.
I mean, they did that with the trailer alone, right?
Yeah. What did they say? Like 100 million people watched the trailers they released before the event. So,
yes.
And obviously they're hoping the network effect of having, you know, 50 million households with the free TV Plus, when your friends come over and they say, oh, I want to go and watch that show, and then you'll get the friends at least buy it, right? So that, and if you, the Apple can actually do really well on its comparing numbers to like net, because obviously Netflix likes to tout how many millions of people watch Stranger Things or whatever. Well, remember, Netflix has 1,000 shows plus on their service. Apple's going to launch with like 8. And so theoretically, the amount of eyeballs per show is going to be higher on TV Plus, even if you've got a lower number of subscribers, because you can only watch 8 things. So they could actually get a very healthy number in terms of like morning show, people viewing the morning show, mm-hmm. because the subscriber base is going to be so concentrated on, you know, a handful of shows only.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting you bring up the TweetDeck column thing where you're like searching for Apple TV Plus. Do you actually see people calling it Apple TV Plus, or do you see people calling it Apple TV? Because that's something I actually brought up a TweetDeck column just to search for Apple TV in the last like month or so, just to watch how it's going to run up to launch. And I see the same thing you with all the fan accounts and mm-hmm. stuff. But even just general people, I've seen loads of people call it like Apple Plus, Apple TV, Apple blah blah blah. Like, I don't know. That's a separate whole problem entirely, is the branding of Apple TV Plus. It's a long name, a lot of syllables, and that's always a downside, right, compared to Netflix or Disney Plus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your Apple TV Plus. And you have the confusion of, well, where do I actually watch this? Because it's called Apple TV Plus, but I don't need an Apple TV to watch it. I bet there's a lot of people in the world that are like, oh, I'd love to watch this show, but I don't have an Apple TV. And it's not even going to cross their mind that when Apple says the TV app, that means something on their phone at all. Because even the icon for the TV app, you know, in the end of the commercials where it's like they show you the trailer and at the end it says watch this on the Apple TV app. Mm-hmm. Well, the Apple TV app icon looks like an Apple TV because it's rounded rectangles, right, all the way down. So I think they're going to have a lot of confusion there, and maybe in the future they'll even like rebrand it. Because if you look at like the Twitter accounts, the official Apple Twitter accounts, they have Apple TV Plus. Like at Apple TV Plus spelled out, but they don't tweet on that. They tweet on at Apple TV, and that has the Apple TV icon as its avatar. Like, there's a big like spaghetti mishmash of confusion around exactly what the service is even called. And I think we're going to see a lot of people just shorten it and call it like Apple Plus, and also be confused about, well, do I need an Apple device to watch this? Well, technically, no. Do I need an Apple TV device to watch this? Which is an even smaller subsection of the market. No, as well, but you know, they just need to do like adverts where they just tell people where they can even watch this stuff. Because I think people are watching the trailers and being like, oh, I don't have an Apple TV pass for now, right?
Yeah. So they've done a pretty good job of taking the term Apple TV and using it so loosely to mean the TV app. Like, they don't say the TV app, they say the Apple TV app, even if the label is just TV. They've been very aggressive about making that just, you know, lack of distinction, you know, to say it's, because it isn't like the Apple TV app is an app on your phone that reproduces like the tvOS experience. It's the TV app that's on the Apple TV too. I've not seen the Apple Plus mentions, because I'm, you know, my column doesn't mention, doesn't search for plus, you know, whether it's spelled out or the symbol. But you know, I don't think I see people say, I think they're just saying like on Apple or Apple TV. And I think the plus, like in terms of like how we discuss it, we say Apple TV Plus to mean the service, but I think in the masses it's just going to be Apple's video service is called Apple TV. That's what all the stars, like all the talent involved when they're doing interviews, that's what they're saying is Apple TV. And it's almost helped by the fact that the Apple TV set-top box is so not mainstream, you know, and it's not, you know, a hit in the way that, like, you know, even the Apple Watch is, that if you say Apple TV, you know, one year after the TV Plus is launched, like more people will have been exposed to the Apple TV video service or the TV Plus video service and just call it Apple TV than that know that, that Apple makes a product called the Apple TV. And even so, like that name for the set-top box is always confusing because it's not a TV. You need a TV to use it.
Yeah, there are so many confusing brand things based off the Apple TV root name. It's like crazy.
Right. But I think in the masses, it will be known as Apple TV. The hardware box is obscure, even though, like, you know, it is a product that exists and we like ours. It's almost helped by the fact that it's insanely priced for what it is.
Yeah.
not updated regularly. And, you know, and yeah. It's like, and like naming it, like I was disappointed whenever Apple TV Plus was a name because like Apple Arcade was such a good original name. News Plus, you know, whatever, you know, and Apple Music.
That's kind of the tone for News Plus in general.
Yes. Apple Music was like the obvious from Beats Music, you know, that they bought and, you know, used for Apple Music. But it's like if they were coming up with an original name, you know, like Netflix had to,
maybe they should have just retconned the Apple TV and called it something different and then introduced the service as Apple TV.
Well, you could just say like Apple TV is the service, Apple TV HD is the box, Apple TV 4K is the box, you know, but no modifier means it's the service, you know, and then you've got apps.
Then it still kind of thinks you're talking about the Apple TV 4K content, like, oh, the Apple TV Plus stuff is 4K. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's still overlapping.
And all these things, like, it's sort of the way people refer to them kind of defines the actual name, you know?
So maybe your point about the fact that the Apple TV is kind of not prominent in society in general is probably a good sign, actually, because people that don't have the visual connection to it.
Yeah.
I still think they're going to need ads, like, you can watch TV Plus on the Roku. You can watch TV Plus on your Samsung TV. You can watch TV Plus on the Amazon Fire TV. And maybe they just, and they haven't done any of that to date. Oh, yeah. And you can watch TV Plus on the web. Like, you don't have to have a Mac, for instance, right? Like, they're definitely going to need to do that kind of education. Yeah. They might be waiting until the TV app is actually available more than just like Roku. So when it is actually out on Amazon Sticks, when it is actually out on the full suite of 2018, 2019 smart TVs that they've pledged to support, maybe then's a better time for them to actually like do that kind of teaching, essentially.
Yeah, my Samsung TV did get the black and white icon instead of the, you know, sort of like blue and green and black icon.
Yeah,
at least for what you see to launch the app, and then you launch the app and it still has the blue and green and black icon throughout, you know, like the splash screen. But it's getting caught up with the current branding before the service launches. And the only thing that makes me think that I haven't seen Apple Plus because I don't have the same timeline as you that you're monitoring. But it makes sense in some ways because of the popularity that we imagine Disney Plus will have. Because without Disney Plus, I would say that no one pays attention to the Plus. It's just a modifier just to make the distinction of the service for people who are making the distinction. But most people would just say Apple TV, because like Hulu used to be Hulu Plus to have no ads, and then they dropped the Plus, and it's just like Hulu, and then Hulu with ads, you know, or Hulu with live TV.
At least when you call it Apple Plus, you don't think of the set-top box,
right? But Apple Plus does make me think of like the future bundle that people want to see, Well, I don't think you mentioned this show, but there was even the report from, I forget who, but it was about
Financial Times.
Yeah, Financial Times, which is a great source to say that. I mean, Financial Times broke the story on Apple buying Beats, you know. So they've got connections, and this story is basically Apple wants to make a bundle that includes Apple Music and then some of the other services, but the contracts behind the music business are not happy. They don't like the terms, you know.
Yeah, it sounded very early. Like maybe it's going to be, you know, not coming out till next year, right? Like started these discussions, but basically Apple wanted to bundle music and TV Plus together, and they were going to the music labels to be like, you know, we're going to take a little bit of a hit on our $4.99 for TV. Will you take a little bit of a hit on the music side so we can actually do a bundle that's, you know, significantly cheaper? And it at least sounded like the initial stance was no, but obviously it did also seem like they'd only just started doing these conversations, so who knows how it develops. And of course, Apple could decide just to forfeit their share of the... So right now you pay $10 a month for Apple Music, and then $7 of that goes to the music label. So theoretically, Apple could offer, you know, TV and music for $7 if they didn't want to make any money at all, right? But obviously they can't do that because they're going to make some money, but maybe they could do, you know, $11.99 if they want to do music and TV Plus together or something like that, right? Like, mm-hmm. they're obviously going to try and bargain to get the music labels to also reduce some of their money, so overall profitability is higher, but they do have leeway in terms of their situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else on TV Plus for the week?
Yeah, the one other thing I wanted to bring up was that there was news that Apple is has signed off to make a sequel to Band of Brothers, which is a very successful TV series, and it's called Masters of the Air, which I think is the third book that the series is based on. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about this one specifically is that Jamie Ehrlich, which is one of the duo of the Sony duo that Apple hired, is running the effort to actually make Apple production studio. So Masters of the Air will be made by Apple, because obviously all the shows we've seen to date are actually made by other production companies and Apple, you know, buys out the rights to them. Whereas Masters of the Air, according to, this is a Variety report, will actually be the first show where Apple's making it in-house. So their employees are shooting it, their employees are directing it, their employees are hiring. They, again, they might like pay a director, but the production company will be Apple. It won't be a third party, which is interesting.
Yeah, and the producers get all the money in the end.
Apple's spending, like, obviously if you make the show entirely yourself and you don't rely on licensing, you can reduce costs. Mm-hmm. And we've certainly heard that Apple is spending a lot of money on this stuff, so even like a 20% cost reduction basically mean they can spin up a whole extra show of their, you know, billions of budgets, because, you know, they're spending a lot of money on this stuff. We heard that they even spent like $60 million on $60 million on talent alone for a film, not even a series, for a Christmas Carol remake starring like Will Ferrell. And $60 million on talent alone, not even the making of the film, just on what they're going to pay the lead actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. $60 million. So they are spending a lot of money on this stuff. And if they can cut costs where they can, that means they can make even more shows. So it sounds like they are putting in the beginning gears to make their own shows themselves.
Yeah, we've been talking about this sort of, you know, the making of this TV service for so long, like months and months, you know, even multiple years. And we're finally, like, as we record, we're like, 2 weeks and a day from the launch. It's November 1st, right? So yep. We're 15 days out from the launch as we release the episode, 2 weeks out. So we'll finally go from all of this, like, what they're doing to this is literally what it is. It will expand as time goes on, but this is what the product is, you know, from launch. And so that'd be cool. You know, I guess in about 3 weeks, we'll get to discuss, you know, what we watched. And I've really enjoyed the post Apple Arcade launch discussions around, like, we've had some, like, what games are people playing on this podcast and other podcasts, and just like even on Twitter and on online. But I've enjoyed that as like a new way to talk about an existing thing, because it's now part of an Apple service. And there's so much content in Arcade that not everyone is on the same page in terms of what they're trying out. And TV Plus can easily be that way. Hey, I'm saying TV Plus instead of, you know, whatever else. TV Plus can be that way, because there's going to be so much content that, you know, you can't consume all of it in a week's time, unless you really try, I guess. But we'll pick up what we like, and we'll kind of talk about, like, you know, is this compelling? Like, will you recommend this service to friends and family, you know, and share about it? Or, you know, I'm looking forward to getting to that part of this process.
Yeah, and I think just predicting the future, there's going to be a lot of the situations where the shows are, fingers crossed, good, but they need more shows to actually make it a service that you actually pay for. So that's where the free year comes in, because realistically, the money-making equation for a customer is like the, you know, what you're getting for what you're paying for the everyone that's bought iPhones and stuff and everyone's listening to this show doesn't really come in as a factor until September 2020, where right now they're launching with like 12 pieces of content total. And hopefully by September 2020, their library will be like in the numbered of like 30 to 50, that kind of range, where it becomes much more of like a standalone thing. Because when you've got 9 or 10, you can have some real hits, but that's still a hard sell even at $4.99, I think. So the real like test of the service's appeal is this time next year. But yeah, I can't wait to like look at this stuff. I'm fingers crossed that the shows are good. I really want C to be good. They were quoted in like the Emmy magazine. They had an interview where they were comparing it directly to Game of Thrones in terms of like epicness. And you know, that's another one. They spent a lot of money. I hope it's good. I have some reservations about the viability of a show where no one can see, but fingers crossed. And the morning show looks cool. And you know, I'm pretty excited for, I think everyone's like laughing it off, but the shows they have, like ignoring the quantity problem, look pretty good. Like the lineup's pretty solid, especially with the stuff that they've got coming by the end of the year, like Servant from Shyamalan and The Truth Be Told. Like that drama looks really cool as well, with Aaron Paul and Octavia Spencer and stuff in it. So I think the shows will be good. And then there's going to be the debate of, is it worth $5.99 right now when you can count the number of total pieces of content on two hands? So
Yeah. The one concern that I have as a parent is sort of, there's Helps, there's just one of the kids shows, and there's Snoopy in Space, but there's not a ton yet of like, you could have a children's network out of this, you know. If you had a category, it'd be a few shows. But that's helped by the fact that like my 2-year-old son can rewatch the same thing over and over. And even my 6-year-old daughter, like she watches the same movies on repeat. So you can have, if they like it, they will watch the same thing over and over. You know, I did the same thing as a kid and it was not as easy with VHS tapes, but, totally a thing.
Do you think they're getting Disney Plus?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's a whole part of this is that, you know, a lot of people have always had multiple services. And I wrote a thing in my paper this week, Clarion Ledger, where it's like, you know, with video services, you can pick a few channels. And with music services, it was a look at like how they compete and what the differences are. But it was that, you know, with you want one music service because there's so much overlap. There's no real reason to have two music services. But that's totally different with video services where there's, you know, something you like over here and over there, and they're not priced in a way that is unreasonable to have 2, 3, 4, 5. Like maybe that's getting high up there with 5, but we'll totally do Disney Plus. We'll totally do Apple TV Plus, and it won't be on that like trial basis of does it stick. As long as new shows get added to TV Plus, as we expect they will, and they said they will, then the back catalog of Disney Plus makes that sort of a must have for a family. And then if TV Plus, you know, has enough over time that, you know, it doesn't feel stale and like you're paying to watch the same things over and over, then we'll have both of those subscriptions. We've done Netflix at the same time as Hulu for a long time. But it is one thing I'm watching is how, you know, they have more of the, like the edgy stuff than I might have expected based on some of the early reporting on this stuff. And they need to build out the kids' content more, you know, over time. So
I almost wonder if they're going to like short term seed it to Disney and be like, look, we'll just let Disney handle the family subscription for the time being. And we're going to focus on the kind of like, you know, HBO, Netflix, like drama stuff. Right. Because it's basically impossible to compete with a Disney back catalog of kids' content. So maybe they're just not going to try for a while and concentrate on documentaries and dramas and thrillers and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And can we just acknowledge the like epic Disney Plus tweet thread this week?
Oh, where yeah.
they tweeted every movie and TV show
on TV show
service. Yeah. It was like, it took like hours to get it out there, but it was like, this is the name of the movie in the year that it was released. And here's an image of like the artwork. And it was like one after the other. And part of it was just like, it just looked ridiculous in the way that they were doing it because it just would not end. Another part of it was like, there's nothing actionable about those tweets. Like you could bookmark them or like get excited for it, but you couldn't like save it to a queue to watch when the service launches. It was just a tweet with a picture, and the name and the text. But yeah, that was,
yeah, they must have tweeted like 1,000 times that day. It's kind of insane.
That was something. And then the last point I want to make before we go away for the week is that, you know, not to debate it, but one thing you mentioned was that a lot of people who listen to this show won't be in that pay for the first year part. But I do think it's totally reasonable. Like if you're not in the market for a new Mac or a new iPad, like those are larger purchases, even the 329 iPad is, or new iPhone because you've got like last year's iPhone or a recent iPhone that's still pretty good. That the only reasonable way to get TV Plus for free for the year by like buying a product that you, you know, maybe don't need, but it's like a nice to have thing, is the Apple TV HD at 150, the Apple TV 4K at 180 or 200.
Yeah, 179.
Yeah. Like those, do not buy those for the free year, because what's, it's $60 a year, right? If you just pay.
Correct.
So you do have to need a new product, whether it's an Apple TV in a different room or something. Like I wouldn't say go buy a product to get that free year, because 60 versus 150 is a big...
No, it should 100% be incidental, right? Yes. I bought the iPhone 11 Pro. Oh, it comes with TV Plus. All right. It's not, I was buying the iPhone 11 Pro for TV Plus. And if, who wants and if a you, 2015 Apple TV? Like, yeah, no, if you're interested in the shows, just pay. Like, even if, and even if you just like the morning show, well, here's a tip. The morning show is going to be finished by Christmas, because they only have 10 episodes in the season. They're releasing 3 on day one and then once weekly. So you could pay for 3 months of TV Plus and watch every episode of season one of the morning show, and then subscribe again in a year's time when season two comes out.
Yeah, and I totally do that same thing with HBO and Showtime and other shows, like through the Apple TV channels feature now, but before that, just through their own apps. So that's totally a thing. Like you pay here and there, but not all the time. It's not like one thing you want to see. And I can see us doing that with TV Plus too, in a way that like Netflix is kind of, you need to have it if you want to watch a lot of TV like that, or Hulu. We do Hulu for the live TV stuff. But Apple TV Plus, I mean, they probably want it to be a thing that you have every, you know, throughout the year, all year long, but, it could,
they're not going to have 10 shows forever, but that's the launch situation. Yeah.
It could very well be a thing that you see, you subscribe, you watch the TV show, then you cancel it and you come back to it later in the future. We're getting close to that launch, so that'll be, you know, it's not funny, like we probably won't have much to say about it after the launch, you know, it's like a few weeks old, just here and there. But I'm excited to get to that part of the discussion of, like, you know, this is what it actually is, and we've got experience with it. So, all right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@95mac.com. You can also tweet us. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And we'll be back next week with a new show. Bye, everybody.
Bye.